It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Friday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber coming to you live from various locations. Verizon's Hans Vestberg joins us this hour on their earnings earlier this morning. Dow's down about 3% for the week. Stocks will watch closely today as Georgia starts to relax restrictions, giving us some clues as to how consumers may react to that. Durables down 14 was below estimates. June WTI holding 17 as energy is the only positive sector for the week, Jim, and a lot of discussion about 2800. Are we range bound? Where's the ceiling right now? Markets giving all kinds of important clues.
It's funny. A lot of these analysts, we follow them for a long time. They kind of wait until there's a moment where they can go negative. And I think that there are enough companies that have done well. And as the market went up, these guys were itching to downgrade. I have every piece of research in front of me, and I don't have an upgrade. I just have downgrade, because the stocks have run, and it gives these analysts a chance to be able to say, oh, I'm so lucky. It went from 29,000 to down to 18. It bounced back, and now I can get off and not look bad. And that's the whole tone of this morning. I find it curious because I think that in general the companies have done a pretty good job. It's just that they like to pull their forecasts because who the heck knows? If Dr. Gottlieb doesn't know what's going to happen, why should I expect these guys to know what happens? So those who keep downgrading on the idea that the companies pull the guidance, I think that's a silly exercise. Get you nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, we do have the two upgrades that I saw, Jim, were eBay and Peloton, obviously, leaping on to the ongoing dynamic that we're all going to stay at home. We're going to shop online. We're going to exercise in our basements.
Well, there is a wait. There's a long wait for Peloton. That's what the analysts are doing. They call and it's like they see you can't get one to June, so they upgrade. Really value added. eBay, by the way, that was an interesting piece because it's basically saying, listen, traditional retail, something that David talks a lot about, is just being laid to waste. So therefore, hey, eBay, there was one for Etsy, too. I've got another one. Traditional retail, no good. Etsy. Oh, look at this. Traditional retail, no good. Wayfair. I mean, we ought to just set up we ought to do a squawkonthestreet.com. We can sell old clothes. We can do garage sales. And we'll be recommended by these analysts.
Yeah, well, Etsy is doing a big business, of course, in face masks, as you know. eBay is going to have that new CEO, Mr. Iannone, taking over on Monday. I believe it's Wednesday that they report earnings at eBay, and it has had something of a resurgence given, of course, current conditions, as you say. Meanwhile, as we know, guys, old retail continues to be in very deep trouble. I mean, it's no surprise, of course, what we hear from JCPenney. In fact, even in a normal environment, we might not have been surprised to see the company preparing perhaps for the likes of bankruptcy. But it's not alone in this, given how difficult it is for so many retail establishments to do anything when many of them are closed.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that one of the things that we have to start thinking about with JCPenney is not the stock, not the bonds, but the tremendous number of people who work there. And what's going to happen to them? There's 43 million people that work in retail restaurant. What happens to those people? I mean, they get unemployment claims, and then, I mean, you've been a salesperson at JCPenney forever. What's your next move? I don't know. When we had a great economy, the answer is, well, you just make some calls. You go to Craigslist, for heaven's sake. But now I don't know what happens with someone who's laid off. By the way, David, there's a note today about Ralph Lauren and whether people have changed tastes, almost as if since this virus started, like people don't even wear, they don't even wear ties when they go to work. Ralph Lauren ties and clothes.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, it is Friday, Jim.
Yeah, what kind of shoes
you got? When we were together
at
the New York Stock Exchange.
But you're wearing expensive shoes.
It's not Saturday, David.
I am wearing shoes.
Right? I mean, you're not wearing shorts.
It's not Saturday.
Are you in your Bucks? Are you in your Tommy Johns with no wedgies?
It's casual Friday. No, I'm wearing shoes. I feel like you need the shoes to actually have, you know, the feeling that you are at work. So I'm not in slippers. I'm not in socks. I am tie-less today, guys. We're all making our own decisions here about attire.
Yes.
But I'm fully with you. And even when we are back one day at the New York Stock Exchange together, I will still be without a tie on Friday.
Right, let me ask you two guys something. Do you think we'll ever go back?
Yeah.
Do you think, Carl?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because I miss it so much. Yeah. I was telling you, I just miss it. I miss the camaraderie.
We all do. It's beginning to wear, I think, on us emotionally, the way the three of us react to each other. It's got to get repaired, which, Jim, is why this Georgia experiment's going to be so important. El Arian on Squawk this morning saying we're going to learn a lot
right.
in the next few days about
I wanna clarify
how safe people feel.
I want to clarify for the confusion that I created was that I wanted to see what happens in Georgia, okay? Because I want to see. I mean, it's an experiment. I wouldn't have done it with Tattoo Parlor. I certainly wouldn't have done it with gyms because I need to sweat and stuff. But I do want to see what happens. And I wouldn't approach it the way he is. The president, I think, first encouraged and then didn't. But I think all of us are kind of thinking, well, is there any hope here? Is there any hope that we can return to something normal? And maybe he's being premature. But I think a lot of us just want to go to the store and, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
Go to the store. I mean, what is that? You know, I used to go to the store all the time until the checker got COVID. Now I'm scared to get to the store.
I know. Well, I never went to the store, but I'm with you guys. Of course, everybody wants to get back to work as quickly as possible. But, you know, it is that balance that is so difficult to determine at this point in terms of opening the economy and keeping the virus at bay and or opening the economy and taking what comes, because frankly, the human suffering that will occur as a result of keeping this economy closed for a longer period of time will be greater than the suffering that occurs if, in fact, it is not open. At the same time, Jim and Carl, the question becomes, what will human behavior be with this virus out there? Will people really be willing to return to the activities that they had previous to when COVID was with us? And that remains very much unclear. And as I know, you know, you believe as well, perhaps, Jim, true behavior is not going to return to what it was until there is a vaccine, which could be many, many months,
right.
maybe years.
Away. How many restaurants can take half the tables out and still make money? Regardless how much the government gives, it's just not going to. That's a way of life. Now, Yum Brands is a very positive, stimulating a return to growth UBS note. But that's the flip side of what happens to the regular restaurants. I had Rich Allison on last night from Domino's, and he talked about he never wanted it to happen. But basically the destruction of regular pizza parlors where you sit down and have a pizza, they can't compete because they can't have the number of tables. So physical distancing is in many ways the death knell of restaurants, the way the mall's problems are the death knell of retail. And I think we have to recognize this wasn't supposed to happen, and it's not good. It's just going to accelerate, and it's bad.
We should take a listen to what Rich told you last night on Mad Money about some of the logistical changes Domino's has made in the wake of the pandemic. Take a listen.
We've taken 60 years worth of standard operating procedures and rewritten most of them in 6 weeks. And contactless delivery is a big part of that. And the pizza pedestal is an innovation our team came up with so that when we bring you your food, we don't have to sit it on the ground or an unclean surface. You know, we're able to put it on top of a recyclable little pizza pedestal so you can take your food in a contactless way.
You can't beat that. I mean, I put boxes out for full day. I don't know who touched them, whatever. Domino's, I have total faith because this is in their DNA. And the pizza pedestal is good. And I feel like I can bring it in my house and it's not going to cause some sort of pandemonium. And that's why DPZ is doing so well. I think that stock, since April began, the numbers are really good. The stock sold off yesterday, but that's because it's been up a lot. But Domino's has figured out a way to make it so that you don't have to have a pizza wait on your doorstep for 24 hours, which, by the way, is not a great way to eat pizza.
It kind of reminds me,
Jim,
of
it also speaks
World
to the
Wrestling. David, WWE is up this morning on a 60% jump in sales, but their CEO says it will take several years for live attendance to return to pre-COVID levels. Also, Needham with this note saying that companies are calling WWE for best practices on talent safety protocols. I mean, these guys have been doing 2 to 3 live shows per week for years, and they have figured out in some ways, Laura Martin argues, how to keep their people safe.
Well, Chipotle sure has. I mean, Chipotle had that problem with airborne food, and they created another way to deal with how their people interact with customers and interact with food. And it happens to be the perfect way for the era of COVID. And that's one of the reasons why they are doing so incredibly well. And I think the stock can go to 1,000. They've got it so that, again, I mean, I'm thinking about these places where if I go to them, I'm not worried, versus a lot of other places where I go to them and I feel like I'm injecting risk. So, I mean, I think we're in like this era of what's risky and what's not. And a lot of these things are like what you never thought was risky before. And a lot of the companies that are the small, medium-sized business, they are the ones that require crowds to do well. And the antithesis of what we can have right now is a crowd. So think about all the things that's like, wow, that place is crowded. Crowded. I don't want to go there. It's not Yogi Berra. But that place is crowded. As soon as you hear that it's crowded, well, you can't go there. I mean, this is incredible. It's the inverse of what retail's about, the inverse of what a restaurant's about. It's a terrible time.
It's true. At the same time, Jim, it's interesting listening to Mr. Allison at Domino's and thinking about the amount of innovation that is going to take place at companies that are quickly adapting to what they believe will be the new behaviors that are going to be adapted by the general population. Business is going to lead here. Unfortunately, perhaps not small and medium-sized yet, although in certain areas they certainly might be able to. But innovation is taking place. It may result in lower profit margins for some period of time as a result of all the things companies need to do. But they're going to do them, and they are beginning to already attack these problems as they perceive at least the world is what it will be like for a long period of time once people are out of their homes.
And I know we got to go, but the airlines have not done a thing. They've not done anything. Everybody has to adapt. I want to go on and think of something, Gary Kelly. Don't just stand there and take it.
Yeah, well, and as Cowan says, it's not just the airlines, it's the airports. People are going to need to feel safe before they ever get to the gate and get on the airlines planes. Guys, we'll take a break. We're going to talk to Hans Vestberg.
COVID distributors. They're called airports.
Yeah. We'll get to Verizon, we'll get to Amex, we'll get to Capital One, Intel, Google, Boeing, and a lot more when we come back. President talked about Georgia's reopening yesterday at the briefing. Take a listen.
I know a lot about economists, and the answer is they have no idea. I think I have as good an idea as anybody, and I think our economy will start to pick up very substantially as soon as the states get open, and that's happening as we speak, and it's actually very exciting, and people are just thrilled to see it, because our country has to get back to work. They want to get back to work. You see that, whether it's a demonstration or just in talking to people. They're going to get back to work, and they're going to get back to work very fast.
We're going to talk to the head of Equinox later on this morning, Jim, who is not opening. We talked to another restaurant owner yesterday who's not opening in Georgia. So it's going to be up to the individual owners. I wonder what you would do right now if Cuomo relaxed restrictions. What would you do with your two restaurants?
We're going to keep both open, the Longshoreman, the more expensive one in Red Hook. We're not sure what the plan is yet. I'm going to try to have a big Cinco de Mayo at Bar San Miguel with margarita boxes out front. We're going to try to do a lot of takeout. We hope it can cover our costs. I did not get a PPP loan applied for it. That's okay. I don't want one now because then people say, oh, he mentioned on it. I don't know. If I can get one, fine. But I'm committed to opening a place no matter what. But the answer is no. I'm worried about droplets. I'm worried about people not wearing masks. I think everyone should have to wear a mask, not for themselves, but because of others. And until everybody has a protocol, which does their absolute best, we pull out the tables, then I don't know how you do it. I mean, we're going to lose money. I can guarantee that. But I also know that we believe there'll be a vaccine within a year and a half. And we want to be the restaurants that survive through that period. I know that's a longer term period in Wall Street. But when you're running a restaurant, it's only 6 years for Bar San Miguel. I want that place to survive. I want to be the only place open on that block a year and a half from now. So PPP loan, yes, if I got it. Without it, I don't care. I think you have to take a longer-term view and say, I am here to win, and I'm going to sacrifice 18 months if I can get through it. And that's what you're going to have to do. It's too dangerous.
So you really, even this week after Roche, There was a Boston Consulting Group guest on Squawk today saying vaccines are a five-year process. You do not believe that.
No, I don't. And I think that J&J is shortening that time. I don't know exactly what we're going to get from Pfizer, but Pfizer's very much involved. Moderna's already started human trials. Inovio, which I had on last night, started human trials. It's been the fastest ever was Ebola, I know, 5 years. But these are these companies. Who would have thought we had an atomic bomb in the time we did? Who would have thought we cured polio in the time we did? Nobody. So I'm saying I'm taking the other side of the trade of the 5 year plan. And I think that betting against an Alex Gorsky right now is a big mistake. They're building plants to be able to have billions of doses. Why would you spend $250 million building plants if you had to wait 5 years? So maybe every one of those guys, maybe Pfizer's just idiots and J&J's are fools. I'm not betting against American science. It's been a sucker's bet. And the Chinese want to bet against us, fine. But I'm a believer that a year and a half from now, we're going to have something that makes it so you're going to want to go to Bar San Miguel and actually go inside and have, okay, not a Corona, but a Modelo.
Right. But it's inconceivable to even imagine that we're going to be on lockdown for 18 months or 2 years or some parts of the population are, which is why it's so going to be so interesting and important to watch what happens in these states that do begin to open and what the behaviors are of people and the willingness to go out and start to actually engage in economic activity,
right,
which we're sorely missing, and see what they're willing to do. By the way, we come back to this time and again, Jim, but I think it's an important point, which is there is certainly a greater hope that we will have antivirals available, not just the remdesivir, which, of course, remains very much uncertain,
right,
in terms of whether it really is effective, but much earlier in course, something that would equate to sort of taking Tamiflu to make your symptoms,
yes,
of the flu so much easier to deal with. And then the question will become, will people be willing to feel like, okay, I'm all right to go out? At the same time, that 21% rate that was cited by Governor Cuomo in New York yesterday in terms of potentially people who actually have been exposed to the virus, that is seen as a positive thing because even though it's not near herd immunity, it's getting,
right,
you closer to it. The virus will continue as well to mutate to a certain extent, but there are those who believe it actually will become less harmful. So there are a number of avenues you can go down to feel at least somewhat positive. That said, come back to this overall theme, guys, which is we know so little about,
I know,
so
anybody,
many things.
Can you get it again? Fall really bad, but I got to tell you, there's going to be a class of people who feel a lot more immune than the rest of us. And if you get that antibody, I feel like you might even risk going to live, burn, or die.
Oh, boy, we all look forward to those days. I'll go anywhere. Anywhere you guys want to go, I am there. Wherever.
All right.
You know what?
Right.
We're going to have Hans Vestberg joining us a little later, guys. Of course, as you know, later in the show, Verizon reported earnings today. It did change and lower its guidance for the year as a result, of course, of the current crisis. Hans Vestberg's on the company's conference call now, but he will join us in the second half of Squawk on the Streets. First hour, we got a lot more coming back right after this.
Markets trying to string together a few days of gains here as the data comes in from German business confidence. Got UK retail sales were weak, durables weak here, and University of Michigan at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back to Squawk on the Street. Time for a mad dash, and we will take you all the way to the opening bell. All right, here's a hint. It has a $1.2 trillion market value, and its stock is down 6.4% for the year. Over to you, Jim.
David, one of the things I've always loved about doing the mad dash with you is that pretty much every quarter I talk about Katie Huberty, who's my favorite analyst on Apple. And she's at Morgan Stanley, and she has a real good point here. She goes, it's set up well. Apple's set up well. What is she talking about? New product cycle, new 5G launches coming. And she'll talk about, she says something that I think a lot of people have to recognize. Apple can put through a mid to high single digit dividend increase. The companies that have been doing dividend increases are suddenly getting a lot more PE multiple juice than ones that can't. So I think that's going to factor in. Of course, Apple has a giant cash hoard. This is for the Apple. It's been cut number for ages from all the analysts. I like this call. I think Katie's going to be very right.
Well, its credit quality is certainly a lot better than that of probably the U.S. government at this point, isn't it, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, that's what someone asked me the other day. Jim, why do you like J&J so much? I said, name me something else that's AAA besides batteries.
I know. These companies that are able to have a lot of cash on hand, obviously, and still generate a lot of cash are certainly right. going to be a continued focus given the difficult times that we're in and that are coming still. And we've talked a lot about all the companies that have been able to shore up their balance sheets, however they can have done it. In the case of Apple, they didn't really have to worry about that going into the crisis.
No, they're not pulling down any revolver. Holy cow.
No.
I mean, how about these companies that pull down a revolver and they immediately cut their dividend, like Kohl's? David, I never took you to Kohl's shopping. I got news for you.
No.
I probably never will.
Yeah, that's well, that gets back to the conversation we were having towards the top of the show, of course, with retail.
Ugh.
You know, it's not just JCPenney, Carl, or Neiman Marcus, or Macy's, which was reported to have hired Lazard to explore options for boosting its finances. Not, you know, they have a lot of real estate there. And the Gap yesterday, Carl, as well, saying its current cash position may not be enough. It's a general issue throughout.
Yeah, liquidity versus Apple, the most liquid company on earth.
Yeah. I see Constellation got some new financing, Caterpillar in a new revolver this morning. And then the loss provisions, David, over at Amex this morning, $2.6 billion, kind of puts to shame the $800 million of a year ago.
Yeah, it puts in perspective the stress that people are going to be under and their expectations in terms of their ability to pay their bills, doesn't it? By the way, Verizon, again, we will talk to Hans Vestberg, taking a larger provision for bad accounts. I mean, that's the world we're going to be in. You have, what, 20, how many million people? 26 million people without a job at this point. And obviously the benefits are okay right now. But the concern is that they are not going to be able to continue to pay their bills, important bills though they may be, whether credit card or even wireless phone.
And, you know, David, I'll tell you something that's, I think, going to be frightening for this country. There's become almost a notion of voluntary pay. I've been reading about how most people don't think that tenants are going to pay in May. You know, don't pay in May and go away. I mean, they're just not going to pay. And there's nobody's going to kick them out. I mean, that's not the typical American way is that don't pay your rent. But I'm hearing about it from many REITs, real estate investment trusts.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
I'm not, you know, my tenants aren't paying.
Yeah.
And this isn't the way it's ever been before. Well, maybe in the 30s.
Yeah. That's the second order effects that we're going to probably talk about in late summer and into the fall, Jim. There's the opening bell at the big board. It's Kevin McSpeeden, NYSE Assistant Chief Electrician at the NASDAQ, ringing remotely. It is DraftKings, which begins trading on the NASDAQ today, Jim. We didn't really talk about the draft last night, given the pressures, the issues facing the entire planet, but it is going to be a clue as to how we adapt and try to get back some things that we seem to have lost.
Yeah, it's funny. It was almost like pointed the commercial, the advertisers really knew it. It was a Yum Brands piece today, and Yum was there, well represented. I think that there was just an electricity about having something that was live. And then the second is the Michael Jordan this weekend. I mean, we really crave sports in this country, and we forget, I think, that you put the game on when you go home, and that's gone. I mean, I think that's from time since radio started, you put the game on. Now, I have to tell you, if we showed the wall, the green wall, people who are now tuning us into us that didn't tune in before, they say, what an unreal world Wall Street has. Look at that. Do they not know people are suffering? These are companies that are big and are not suffering nearly as much as the store that you have to go try and do some business with down the block if it's open. These are the companies that are the winners. They got to be public. And I think that people have to understand the small, medium-sized businesses are not on that wall. And we're not trading the pizza parlor. We're trading Domino's Pizza. So I just want people to think, don't equate that with them. We're not heartless. These are the winners, for heaven's sake.
No, I think viewers get that. And I think they understand I've been on Zoom. I'm ordering from Amazon. I'm using my iPad. And, IT, communication services, healthcare. People are being reminded daily what a huge portion of the S&P those sectors are.
Oh, you're right. I mean, I think one of the things we don't talk enough about, but you guys have kids that are going to schools, that whole world of school. I mean, can I just say these teachers are heroes? No teacher signed up to run a Zoom class. I mean, these teachers are incredible. They have had to pivot entirely with why they even got into their profession. And no one ever says anything about them. But, I mean, congratulations, teachers, for figuring out how to run a Zoom class. I mean, unbelievable what's going on out there. How the improvisation in this country is terrific. And we don't talk about it because, well, we're so depressed about everything else, I guess.
Yeah, no, there's a lot going on still that we're able to do, of course. It's hard to imagine what it would have been like even 10 years ago, even five, that we're able to do now that we might not have been.
What would they be doing? How would you be teaching people 10 years ago? What would they be doing?
I don't know, Jim. I don't know. Listen, it's far from ideal, by the way, for the students and the teachers. Everybody would much rather have their kids back in the classroom. It's an issue we've talked about. Listen, it does also have a lot to do with the overall economy. Once you open up the schools again, a lot of other things come along with that. By the way, again, I focus on our university system in this country, which is by far the finest in the world, and whether or not our universities are going to be able to open up again in the fall, and the pressure they're going to be under, yet another constituency that's seeing significant reduction in revenues as a result of no summer sessions, as a result of foreign students who are usually full payers not being able to attend. Yeah. So many students who are going to want to take gap years because they don't want to begin a freshman year, as you might imagine, remotely. So that becomes an issue. The hospital system, getting that restarted with so many of our hospitals sitting somewhat empty and not taking elective surgeries right now. So many parts of our economy need to get back online, but how we're going to do it still remains very much unclear.
They're going to redshirt your son? Because he's not going to be up there. Everyone's redshirted.
Who knows?
Everyone last night was probably going to be redshirted. You know? Everybody.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's interesting. Back to sports, we had Greg Maffei on yesterday. Liberty Media, they own the Atlanta Braves. I mean, you know, baseball should be going on, usually in the background, but it's nice to have a game on. Will they really be able to have a season? It still remains, I think, some unclear. The commissioner may have some sort of a plan. Maffei said this idea of Arizona doesn't seem to be, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but particularly likely, I guess, is what I would say after listening to him. So many of these different sports that we're waiting on, including, of course, football, your first love, Jim, and whether or not those players that we watched get drafted last night are going to be able to take the field in the fall.
It's just, I don't want to get myself down. I think a lot of people are trying to rally and find ways to be able to have a Zoom bra. I'm sure you guys are good. How many Zoom cocktail parties are you invited to this weekend, right?
Yes. Yeah, there's a bunch. I love the Onion headline last night saying that the Browns drafted first just out of habit. There's a lot of good stuff going on in sports. Hey, Jim, I wanted to ask you, it's been a crazy, crazy week for commodities. And this morning, Goldman's Jeff Curry has this note out. And I'll read one line. We've entered the inflection phase where rebalancing has started. Period could take 4 to 8 weeks, they think, but given the nascent recoveries we're starting to see in Europe, I mean, does that make sense, at least for ag, they see the window being a little bit longer, but maybe for oil here?
Rusty Brazil put out this amazing piece, RBN Energy, describing exactly how you could get to minus 37. It's kind of interesting, but I think Jeff's right. I think there is going to be the rebalancing. Notice, by the way, Freeport cut its production for copper. I've been waiting to see someone cut back. As companies cut back, at least we can have some support for commodity pricing, and we'd be a little bit less worried about deflation, which is something I'm concerned about because we have pumped so much money, and prices are still coming down. It's really kind of amazing.
That's interesting you say deflation, of course. I mean, if you read the Elliott note, if you actually got through it from last week without wanting to just be around anymore. They still concerned that, you know, fiat currencies and inflation, it could come at any moment. Everybody could lose confidence and that will be the end of it. Not as much about deflation, Jim.
Well, exactly what happened in Germany. I mean, it was deflation, deflation, deflation. And then one day it was hyperinflation. So I understand the Elliott model. I just am just shocked to see that the commodity companies just kept pumping and pumping and pumping. And it's like they finally realized maybe we're not going to get a V, or maybe they didn't even think there was going to be anything. It's nice to see them at least adjust to the new world. A lot of companies are still trying to hold on to the old world. It's a bad model.
I see Whiting's got is on the tape right now talking about exiting Chapter 11 in 5 months. So we're already getting some of those headlines crossing. Jim, the other thing is guidance and the small sample of mostly chip companies that are, in fact, giving you at least a broad range. Texan, Seagate, Xilinx, and now Intel, who we're going to talk to later on this morning.
Jeez, well, yeah, talk to Bob Swan about the fact that it was positive on the data center. It was positive on the PC. Okay, Mobileye not. And then he somehow managed, and I happen to like Bob very much, but he somehow managed to turn the call into a call that made people want to sell. And I would sometimes like to just be a call impresario, because I just like with Target yesterday, I would have liked to have spun that entirely differently. The fact is that Intel is doing very well. And when you see what Lisa Su has to say, she doesn't have this Mobileye Auto. Lisa Su is going to be able to say, listen, what we do is we have more competitive product, we have more product that people want, and that stock's going to go up. And if AMD goes down on Intel, that's the time to buy AMD. Bob's got to get more. He just didn't handle that call right. And he's such a good guy. But he made it sound like that there's something wrong at Intel. And there really isn't. It's doing very well.
Huh. That's kind of like what you said about Cornell and Target yesterday.
Oh, jeez. I wanted to give him, I mean, I happen to like him very much, but, you know, here you've got a model. It's up 275% in digital, and you're going to figure out how to be able to sell apparel. And he's killing it in his neighborhoods. He's doing such a great job. And somehow the narrative came out that he's under margin pressure. That was such a buy. I mean, I was like, buy. I'm screaming at the set. Buy, buy, buy. I mean, people are selling Target. This thing's next destination is 110. But, you know, even the CEOs, I think, are like, oh, yeah, I don't know. T-shirts, you know, chips. I mean, these guys, I want to go in there and just give them a shot of B12 or something. Hey, how we doing? Well, we're not as good as selling Lay's potato chips. We're selling.
It's not easy, man. It's not easy.
No,
conducting
but you've got to
call
up
from your house in your basement, you know.
But you've got to pretend you're coming through the
crazy
tunnel.
And
the, there isn't
cleaning
gotta,
the toilets every other
well,
day. I mean, who wants to be doing all that stuff?
Well, I don't know. But you got to be a little more jacked.
Yeah.
I mean, you come on these calls and you're not jacked. It's like, this is the NFL, for heaven's sake. Don't come on and make me feel that you're doing badly. Show some enthusiasm, for heaven's sake. This is your moment.
Well, you know,
you only got four games a year.
We got the NASDAQ comp only down 5.1% for the year. Of course, it has been led. You mentioned Apple earlier and Katie Huberty, Alphabet, Amazon, Netflix, certainly your old fang. This morning, though, I do notice a little bit of weakness in both Alphabet and Facebook. Of course, we've talked oftentimes about the reliance that they have on small and medium sized businesses amongst their advertisers,
right.
Obviously large corporations as well, and whether they're going to see a significant deterioration in the ability of those customers to spend. That said, Jim, I don't know if you've run into this, but the Google decision to stop hiring and start cutting expenses, there is at least a cohort of investors there who are sort of like, what are the real margins at the search business? We may actually see what they really are. This could be even more profitable than we ever thought because they're for the first time going to actually cut. You know, even during the financial crisis, Google was hiring. So this is unusual.
I thought this is so great. When you go to a Google facility, I mean, it's kind of like, wow, I always wanted to belong to a really nice country club. I can't believe the amenities. It's time for Google to act like all the other companies and be a little more Spartan. I think Google's a fantastic, my charitable trust owns, it's been a huge win. And I love Ruth Porat, and she knows that. I'm right. You know, I just think she's great, CFO. But you know what? It would be great to see what it's like if you did cut a few expenses. I mean, you don't have to live like a king at a company. Facebook, by the way, is up huge off of the India buy, David. You didn't even mention that.
What got lost in the news this week, David, regarding Alphabet, is this blog in which advertisers are going to have to start to disclose a lot of information about themselves in order to place an ad, and that information is going to be visible to people on the site. You'll see an ad, and you'll be like, who are those guys? That was a big sea change in the disclosure that Google is going to be making.
Yeah, a lot more transparency, and I'm glad you mentioned it, Carl, because so many stories, so many things that we would otherwise have spent a lot of time discussing and focused on in terms of their importance kind of go through the week here and you can barely get to them. But you're right. That's an important change for them. It will be interesting to see what the response is, both from the advertisers and obviously the people who are using the service.
David, do you think that Google's going to bid for Sunday Night Football?
I don't know, Jim. I think, you know, there had been a belief that ABC, part of Disney, would certainly be involved there. We were very focused on the NFL rights prior to the crisis because of the likes of could Viacom, you know, have the financial wherewithal? Right. What about Fox? There's so many different questions there. I don't know whether or not they actually would step up for it. The feeling had been prior to this that probably not.
Yeah.
Experience. You know, it's hard to, it's right. difficult to say. And at this point, obviously, we watched the draft last night, but, you know, they haven't moved forward with those negotiations. No. I know that there had been hope in some parts, certainly at Viacom, to get them done as quickly as possible, trying to put that question right. aside for them and say, hey, we got it done. Look at that.
David, you know how long it's been since you mentioned Viacom? Remember you put the kibosh
time.
On it at 30? That's not a 2-for-1 split, David. You back that thing. By the way, it's in the Oxford English Dictionary now. Backish.
Oh, it's
yeah. It means David.
Listen, it's only down 60.
Oh, there's a good chart. That's like when you're coming off a K2 the wrong way.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah,
David.
It's only down 62%. It's actually bounced well off the bottom.
Oh
so,
yeah.
You know, it's got that going for it.
Super, Dave. Super. I daved you. I haven't daved you in ages.
You haven't daved me in a while. Super Dave. Remember that guy? Yeah.
Oh, Super Dave Osborne, the best. Are you kidding me?
All right, we've had
that
fun.
That was great.
Enough.
Jim, we haven't touched on Boeing. Bloomberg saying they're pacing for layoffs next week, cutting 787 production. And then the Journal today that the virus is delaying the approval process for the MAX.
Well, David Portnoy, that noted analyst, had the best thing to say about it last night on Missy Lee's show. He wants to punch Boeing in the face. David Portnoy, you don't know.
Punch Boeing in the face.
Well, no, he's saying if it were a person. Boeing's a tough stock to own is what I think. You don't know Portnoy's work. He's an intelligent investor. He's a Buffett, an acolyte. David, you know, Barstool.
Got it. I know. He's the guy who rated your pizza. You got a really high rating.
And that's why we're staying in business, David. We're going to be a parlor.
It's nice to laugh. All right, guys. We're going to talk to Hans Vestberg after this break. Of course, Verizon reporting earnings this morning did lower its guidance. Let's hear what Mr. Vestberg has to say, not just about guidance and the virus, but the new normal as well. We're back after this.
Jim, we're going to shuffle some things around here as we wait for Hans Vestberg in a few moments. And let's do it up on MAD tonight first.
Okay. The stock that has been one of the most talked about stocks this market is Nordic American Tanker. Largest company to store oil. Herb Bjorn Hansen, been a while for him. And then Impossible Foods. Why them? Take a look at Beyond Meat. It's up 30 straight points. They're reporting next week because the food chain in our country is being destroyed, except for when it comes to plants. So there you go. Something's doing well in this country. Plants. Dave.
All right. That's a good one. Jim, food supply is a huge story.
Thank you,
Carl.
We will
take
a
break. We are going to talk to, all right, we'll see you soon, Jim, Hans Vestberg of Verizon on their earnings and their guidance in a few moments. Jim, we mentioned Zoom Video a few moments ago. It is going to join the NASDAQ 100 with a market cap of almost $50 billion. It would make it bigger than Micron, bigger than Biogen, bigger than CSX. Put it in the top third of the index, which a while ago it would have been in the bottom fifth.
300 million customers, maybe some upset because of the encryption problems. They have Chinese servers. But Eric Yuan, he runs the company right as if it's his own company. I invited him to our boozy brunch last Sunday. It was just meant to be kind of one of those not to be accepted. He said, sure, I'll come. I mean, this man is one of the great proselytizers for a great company. I do love Zoom. I love what he's doing. He's enabling schools to be schools. Got to hand it to the guy. Good prices,
so,
too, and, if you keep
so
the call
for those who
minutes.
Ask. So for those who want to look way ahead, obviously, and imagine what happens to the stock if a vaccine shows promise, I mean, the thesis here is that we're not going to roll back entirely the progress this company's made.
people hate commuting. There are a lot of kids who can't go to school at the same time as others. The prices are very inexpensive. I think it just becomes, to me, necessity. David?
Actually, a good place to discuss Verizon, given everybody working remotely and using, of course, their internet connections, broadband, and their wireless phones. Let's bring in Hans Vestberg. He's become a fairly frequent contributor to the program over these last few tough weeks, and we're very happy about that. And happy to have you back, Hans, after the company reported its earnings. I do want to start off with your outlook and guidance. It's something I'd sort of asked you about in the previous conversations we'd had. You're finally able to share it. You did lower your expected adjusted EPS growth this year to now what could be negative 2 to as much as 2%. And you basically cited significant headwinds prevailing through second quarter 2020. Give us some specifics as to what those significant headwinds that Verizon is facing are.
So first of all, I think we had a really solid quarter given the COVID-19. We had a growth of our earnings per share by 5%, which included also a big increase of bad debt with almost 4 cents. So it was a good quarter, and the cash flow was up 26%. But when we look into the second quarter, and we actually framed up the last 4 weeks what has happened. Of course, there are some sort of things that are inflected by ourselves. We have the Keep America Connected, meaning that we're not disconnecting any customer that is impacted by the COVID-19, if they're consumers or SMBs. And that means, of course, we have some customers that in this moment are not able to pay, and we're not disconnecting them. That doesn't mean that we are finding plans to work with them. That's impacting. Roaming charges, of course, going down. There's nobody traveling. And we also have a lower handset or hardware business at this moment because our customers are buying less of hardware. That is making an impact in the second quarter right now. What we're encouraged of is that with the last week, we have seen a good payment structure from our customer that has improved. We saw it coming down in the beginning of the pandemic, and now we see a little bit better payments from those customers that are impacted by COVID-19. But it's a little bit too early to say, and that's why we wanted to continue to have guidance transparent to our customer, to our shareholders, in a time where there's so much uncertainty. So we moved down a little bit on our EPS guidance, but with a lot of color what we're seeing right now.
Right. And you said on the call as well, Hans, that you will know more, as we all will, over the next 90 days and be able to report back at your next quarter in terms of the health of your customer base and how many are actually able to pay their bills. You're hoping, I guess, we get clarity in these next 90 days.
Yes, absolutely. That we will definitely know more the next 90 days. But at the same time, we have a service that is so important for this country at the moment, for all our customers. They are relying, having broadband work from home or education from home or connecting in different ways. So long term, we take the right decisions. Short term, that might be a little bit painful, but long term, we will come stronger out from this. And I think our customers are feeling that we are flexible and working with them. So we're going to know more about that going forward. But I think that for Verizon, we are coming out stronger from this.
Right. Now, you did increase your CapEx guidance in the quarter because, as you said, you felt it was a good time to continuously have a robust network as you went into this difficult time. But I am curious as well about the rollout of 5G. We came into this year expecting it would be a significant cycle, that you would get a lot of permitting to get cell sites in place, and obviously that the devices themselves would begin to be on sale. Has that upgrade cycle and has that 5G cycle slowed? I know AT&T told us they were having some permitting problems.
No, actually not. I mean, we divided our team very early on. One team working with a crisis, one team working with business as usual, rolling out networks, attending our customers, and one team working on the new normal. How will we operate when the pandemic is over? So on the second prong, I mean, so far we are on plan with our 5G, of the deployment on 5G nationwide, our cities, and how many radio base stations we want to do, as well as on our fiber rollout. Our team has found innovative ways to work with the digital permitting with municipalities to continue to do it. And we have very good sort of connections with our supply chain that is intact at this moment. So far, we haven't any problems. We're on plan. there might be problems because there's a lot of unknown out there, but I have a lot of confidence in my team that they will continue to execute. And on the handset side, we said it's going to be some 20 devices of 5G this year coming out with millimeter wave. So far, we have launched 3 of them. And we believe we're on plan to continue to release the other 17 this year. So we're still on plan with, of course, challenges, but we're not letting that go. We think it's time and is of essence here, and our customers is really needing 5G and the capacity that will give them as well.
Hans, when companies used to combine in the telco space, and there used to be so many cell phone companies, there was always the moment for the superior operator to go in and convince the new, let's say, the acquired company people, their customers, don't go with, in this case, T-Mobile. Go with us, because it's that moment when you can grab them. What are you doing to try to get those Sprint customers to go to you and not T-Mobile?
I think we have developed the last 2 years since we launched Unlimited, a very flexible model with mix and match. We have different Unlimiteds. Offerings. We have Visible, which is an all-digital brand. We have Yahoo Mobile. We work with TracFone. So I think that regardless where customer needs to end up, we will have the service for them. So we feel really good about our service. And up to our store closures, we had a good progress on the writing new customers. But we put the priority on our employees very early on, and we reduced our footprint on stores dramatically down to 30% and smaller footprint. So I would say we had a good momentum coming into this year, and we ran all the way up to the pandemic very well. Now we are revamping that, of course, with a digital channel with our customers. So I feel good about how we can compete in this market with the offerings we have and the network we have.
And let me ask you another offering. I'm a Comcast customer, but I also have Fios. And I'm always surprised that you don't do more with Fios. Once again, you have that kind of smaller gains each quarter. And why don't you go for broke with Fios?
So first of all, we have our limited franchise on Fios where we can deploy Fios, which we're doing. And I have to say, we had the same precaution here with our employees, and we started somewhere in the middle of March to not go into home to do installation. On the other hand, our team have now innovated so we can actually install Fios in a box, meaning that the customer, we never need to go into the customer premises. At the same time, we have a digital agent that can help the customer to install. So we are now ramping up to come back to the same volumes of installation without going on to the home. This is the benefits of this pandemic, because you need to innovate. And our frontline employees are fantastic to find these ways of actually innovating. So we're going to continue to push for Fios in the footprint we are. And I think we know that that's the best broadband service in the country. We will continue to serve our customers and continue to expand the footprint in the footprint we have.
Yeah, Fios in a box. Of course, we were talking earlier on the program about innovation, and that's certainly an example of it, Hans. I want to come back to 5G, though. I understand you're getting the permitting. You're doing what you need to do, spending the money you need to. But the handset question, I mean, people can't go to the stores and buy them. It's not clear where Apple's really going to be in terms of the transition. I don't understand why you're so confident that people are actually going to upgrade, especially given the economic pressures that people are under as well.
As we said, we don't really know where the second half of this year will end up. So, of course, some of your comments might be relevant. But I think also that when we see the improvements and the performance improvements on 5G, I think that people will actually want that. And we also have an opportunity to do a digital channel. We already see right now that our customers are start buying phones and upgrades digitally, and that's a new normal. So that means that we also have means to actually handle this. So I'm as confident as I can be at this moment, of course, with uncertainty of the second half. But right now, we're executing on the plan as it would be a almost normal second half when it comes to handset technology and uses of our network.
Right. Well, that's a hope there. Finally, Hans, you've mentioned the new normal a number of times. So what are you doing to sort of prepare for the environment that we're going to all inhabit once we get, so to speak, on the other side of this virus? I mean, what's going to be different that's going to stay different for Verizon and its customers and its employees?
I think we're going to see a lot of new products that are geared for working from home, telemedicine, education from home, in a time that would be impossible, will now be broken down. The way we're working in our office, etc. So that will continue in the new normal. So, and we are catering for new products, but ultimately mobility, broadband and cloud services will be essential in the infrastructure that we have in the new normal.
Yeah. And last question, Hans, you know, just on advertising, you do have some visibility into it, given your media businesses. It's not particularly good. I know you indicated that. What are your expectations there in terms of advertising, both as a huge spender when you market and as, of course, what you're seeing coming in for your media businesses?
We saw in the last 4 weeks that we measure a downturn on the digital advertising for obvious reason. Advertisers don't want to do it. So we're probably going to see that for a while as this pandemic is overshadowing everything else, which is right, and it you should do in these times. On the other hand, we have seen an enormous uptick on our media asset when it comes to usage of Yahoo Finance, Yahoo Sports, and our Yahoo News. So we have much engagement. A good basis for going forward when you come out from this, but clearly a downturn now.
Yeah. Hans, always appreciate your taking time and very much happy that you've been able to share your insights with us over these last very difficult weeks. Look forward to seeing you again soon. Hans Vestberg, Chairman and CEO of Verizon. Carl?
All right, David. Our thanks to Jim. Hope he has a good weekend. We'll see him tonight on Mad Money. S&P has gone red.
Impromptu boozy party? What do you guys say? Zoom? 2 o'clock
we'll
tomorrow.
Wait for the invite,
sure,
Jim.
2 o'clock tomorrow. I'm going to do one. Just
I'm
drop
ready.
By. You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.